The Supreme Court says you can't be fired from your job anymore for your sexual orientation. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead this hour, a look at what this historic Supreme Court ruling means for workplace protections here in Florida. Give us a call with your questions. It's 549-2937. Then later, a conversation with Jacksonville teen activist Taylor Richardson and her mom. But first this hour, in a surprise ruling, the Supreme Court has affirmed landmark legal protections that ban discrimination for LGBT Americans in the workplace. In a 6-3 decision, the High Court ruled that companies cannot unfairly fire or otherwise discriminate against their LGBTQ employees. This is a wide-ranging ruling with serious implications for the workplace, and there is a lot to discuss and learn. On the line with their thoughts, we're pleased to welcome labor law attorney Richard Margulies. He's office managing principal at the Jackson Lewis firm here in town. Hi, Richard.
Good morning.
Thanks for being with us. And also joining us, Jimmy Midyet with the Jacksonville Coalition for Equality. Jimmy, good morning to you.
Good morning, Melissa.
Full disclosure, Mr. Midyet is a candidate for our public office. He's running for the Duval County Clerk of Courts role. And here's our question to callers. What are your thoughts about the Supreme Court's ruling guaranteeing equality in the workplace for LGBTQ Americans? What they're saying is you can't be fired from your job anymore for your orientation. And there are other aspects of this ruling. Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. Already getting lots of those. Richard, let's begin with you. There are lots of questions as people are processing this really important and, in fact, landmark ruling by the Supreme Court. One question we've been getting from a lot of listeners is this one. They're saying that they thought these protections already existed for LGBTQ job applicants and employees. Is that true or not?
So it wasn't true. And Jimmy can also talk about this, because when the city of Jacksonville was proposing its ordinance maybe 5 or 6 years ago, that was one of the questions that was there, is why do we need this? And currently, 22 states have these types of protections. The state of Florida is not one. And in fact, the 11th Circuit, which is the federal circuit in which Florida, Georgia, and Alabama reside, has recognized as soon as last year that this type of protection, which otherwise would extend to people on the basis of their race and national origin and sex, did not include sexual orientation or gender identity. And so that's why this is a huge change for businesses that operate in those states.
Jimmy Midyet, you were part of the local effort that went on for years to include these protections in Jacksonville's local human rights ordinance. The city council just last week re-voted on this and codified it into local law. And so now the Supreme Court has issued a ruling that extends coast to coast. As someone who's been involved in this fight for years, what are your thoughts today?
I'm really pleased both with the local response to the need and clearly to this Supreme Court decision, which is sweeping and national in scope. There were no protections like this in many states. As your other guest mentioned, there were only 22 states that had comprehensive job protections for LGBTQ people. So that's why we worked on the local level in Jacksonville and Atlantic Beach and frankly, throughout Florida to make these protections possible. We've come up short in Tallahassee time and again, but this particular Supreme Court case, Bostock v. Clayton County, Georgia, makes that piece, the employment piece, the law of the land for LGBTQ people.
And so, Richard, what does this mean for employers as they take note of this new law? And this is now codified into federal law nationwide.
Well, a lot of businesses in Jacksonville, particularly the larger businesses that had operations across the United States, had already embraced these protections and included them in their personnel policies, in their training, in their extension of benefits. And so for them, it won't be much of a change for businesses that had not done that yet. And it's important to recognize that this applies to businesses that have 15 or more employees. They are going to have to make changes. And you can read anywhere where these changes should be. Well, you need to review your personnel policies. You need to add these types of protections to your policies. That's not going to be enough. It's going to require a lot of awareness and a lot of sensitivity training, a lot of information that has to be imparted, I believe, to your management, to your supervisors, to your entire workforce, because these types of trainings may not have been provided to employees in the workforce before. And employers need to be aware of that, particularly if they haven't taken any steps to do that before. You know, we live in a time of tremendous social justice awareness, and that may not go away next week or before the election. So this is going to require some thinking, some advance preparation, and also be prepared to respond to issues that employers in Jacksonville and Florida may not have faced before.
What would be some of those issues? What are some examples that you might be able to picture of how this will be handled at different companies, whether it's a decision whether to terminate someone or whether it's an employee coming forward and saying, I'm being discriminated against because of my sexual orientation?
Well, let's say, for instance, to what extent do employers have an obligation to ensure that coworkers use proper gender pronouns? You know, he, she, they. What if employees just refuse to do that? One of the things that the Supreme Court did not address is where the religious beliefs may bump up against this new decision. And what if I, as an employer, what if I, as a coworker, don't want to recognize your gender identity or how you express yourself from a gender basis? What if I, as an employee, I object to a transgender employee using a particular same-sex specific bathroom? I mean, those are the types of issues that employers in Florida in particular just may not have faced yet and may not have thought about, but they sure need to pretty quickly.
And these types of details and specific aspects of this could create issues down the road. Jimmy Midyet, what about that? This vote on the Supreme Court was 6-3. It was decisive. The minority did speak, though, to those who object on the grounds of what they call religious liberty. What are your thoughts there?
That's absolutely true, Melissa. The three justice minority in different ways made that point that there could be some problem with religious liberty. That argument has largely been rejected by scholars because they're, we don't give every person an individualized license to discriminate based upon their religious beliefs. In fact, to take this back to the Supreme Court decision, by placing this particular non-discrimination framework within Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, that actually goes beyond whatever religious carve-outs we may have even had in our local HRO. So only with regard to hiring of a religious organization for someone who is to be a leader or a teacher of that faith. Otherwise, now there is no blanket permission to discriminate in those sorts of organizations. So I think that we'll continue to see this develop, but at this point, the law is what it is.
Let's go to your calls now as we discuss the Supreme Court's ruling, a historic victory for LGBTQ Americans. Yesterday, the court ruled that the federal law that bans sex discrimination in employment extends and applies to LGBTQ employees. In other words, you can no longer fire someone for being gay or lesbian or bisexual or transgender. You can't discriminate against them in employment. This is specifically applied to the workplace. So What are your thoughts and questions about this? It's 549-2937. Susan in Mandarin. Hi, Susan. You're on the air.
Yes. What is the practical implications of this ruling? So in Florida, an employer can fire someone without giving a reason. So what can somebody do if they get fired and were suspected of being fired because of gender discrimination? And I just have one other quick question. Will this have ramifications for defining gender discrimination, not only discrimination against cis women, but trans women and sexual orientation? Because I know that we're giving voucher money to schools that discriminate against based on gender, sexual orientation, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So will that no longer be allowed? Can they stop giving our taxpayer money to schools that discriminate?
Yeah, thank you, Susan. Quite a few points she made, Richard, and she's correct. Florida's voucher schools are allowed to discriminate in hiring and employment in this area. That includes a handful of schools here in Jacksonville. And so let's begin there. How does this ruling affect that aspect of the workplace?
So that's to be determined. You know, the Supreme Court made a decision and took pains to limit it to the employment arena. That having been said, there are cases, as Jimmy mentioned, coming up next term dealing with, I believe, a Catholic charity that was defunded in Philadelphia because it would not allow or it discriminated against someone on the basis of their sexual orientation, I believe. But it is to be determined whether this decision will affect higher education, whether it will affect public housing, whether it will affect secondary education and funding of secondary education. So we don't know the answers to that yet. You know, some people who are in favor or, you know, advocates for this decision believe it will. Others believe that based on the religious arguments that against the expansion of this law will believe that the Supreme Court will not have a particularly big effect. This decision won't have a particularly big effect in other areas beyond employment.
Jimmy,
so we don't know.
We don't know. Yeah, a lot of unknowns, Jimmy. And what about her other point? In a state like Florida, a right-to-work state, employers have a lot of discretion in hiring and firing. And they don't have to give you a reason for why they're terminating you. So you might suspect this is the reason, but you might not be able to prove it.
Well, these cases always come down to a tremendous amount of evidence and proof, and that's always the devil is in the details. My friends in the labor movement prefer to call this a right to fire state rather than right to work employment at will. That's and they're right about that. That you can be fired for almost any reason by your employer or no reason at all. Where this particular concept crosses that is that they can't be fired on the basis of sexual orientation. They can't be fired on the basis of their gender identity. So you can, all of the tools are now available to LGBT workers to prove that they are in a hostile work environment, or that they have been singled out for some different treatment because of their gender identity or sexual orientation. So these are things that that are new in a way. But there's plenty of case law around the country related to this in terms of just, what we would have called traditional sex or gender discrimination that we can now look at as a guidepost.
Lots of tweets coming into the show. Here's one from Daniel. Protections on the books are always a victory and necessary, but it simultaneously rarely changes community level attitudes. You might be protected from losing your job in Jacksonville, but will still be treated differently, he says. Michael tweets, the decision shows how everyone's rights are intrinsically linked. It's a historic first national victory for transgender rights. I am in tears of joy, but there's still more work left to do. Richard Margulies, this does apply to transgender Americans. Can you talk a little bit more about what the ruling will do for that group of employees?
So it gets to what Jimmy was talking about. It gets to what your caller was talking about. And that is the extension of these protections, much the same as currently exist for race and age and national origin and disability, to an entire group of people based on their gender expression and to the transgender community. And so, you know, those are the issues that still remain to be decided as to, how this law will play itself out in other areas. But in the employment area, transgender employees and transgender people now have the same rights and are on the same footing as everyone else. You know, one of the things that your caller mentioned was this is an at-will state. That's a fallacy in the sense that every employment decision that an employer makes, whether it's a hiring or firing, a promotion, a pay decision, a disciplinary action, has to have some legitimate business reason behind it. That's what these laws are designed to protect. And so while you can certainly hire or fire someone for a good reason, a bad reason, or no reason at all, you can't fire them or you can't not hire them because of an illegal reason. And this decision expands what those illegal reasons might be.
Thanks for that. 549-2937, as we talk about the historic Supreme Court ruling protecting LGBTQ Americans from discrimination in the workplace. This is something that community had long sought. Taylor at the beaches. Hey, Taylor, good morning.
Hey, good morning. I've called in before. I unfortunately am victim to discrimination by the state of Florida and a local government that I work for. They discriminate on people based on their age. Mm. And the age currently is 49. So if you're under 49 and start at 18 years of age like I have, you can be discriminated against whether you're black, white, woman, man, gay, straight, doesn't matter.
So you think you were let go from a job because of your age?
I'm currently having my money withheld and stolen from me every paycheck because of my age, ma'am. By local government officials in this city, I've tried to get help on this so many times, it's countless, and nobody's willing to help because they think I'm joking, I guess. But, I mean, I have the black and white data. Hmm. The union that I work for discriminates when they steal these young people's money. And again, it affects everybody. If you steal from the young, you're affecting everybody that you're supposedly looking out for.
Well, sorry to hear that, Taylor. And, believe me, that is not an uncommon story, Jimmy. People feel that their age, and we're getting a little off topic here, but age discrimination, ageism, that's a real thing in the workplace. But whether it's that or any other area where federal protections exist, as you pointed out a minute ago, in order to prove that you feel you were let go from a job because of your age or your and now your sexual orientation or your gender or your race, it's still a high bar, isn't it, to prove the case if you decide to go after an employer in that way?
It can be. I would say that, you know, Richard Margulies is probably the person that the gentleman who just called would want to speak to, because there is federal law on this. It's the Age Discrimination in Employment Act of 1967, and the trigger is 40 years or older. So folks who are over 40 or older who experience discrimination in their workplace on the basis of their age actually do have a cause of action and can get relief on that. The proof is always difficult, but one of the great tools that we have in Jacksonville is that we have a Jacksonville Human Rights Commission. So folks can also go and make their complaints to the JHRC, and the JHRC will actually begin to investigate and help people, you know, determine if they have been the victim of discrimination in their employment. And they do that, you know, now on the basis of race, color, national origin, family status, age, sexual orientation, gender identity, all the categories we're talking about. But there are avenues to explore for folks like your last caller.
Okay. Richard, what's your final piece of advice for both employers and employees out there who are digesting this big news?
Well, it gets back to what I was talking about earlier. And that is that We are in a time of social justice and awareness of race issues have been brought to the front page, and the pandemic has almost taken a back seat. Now we've added to this heightened awareness of rights that people have based on their sexual orientation or gender identity. And so employers need to adapt if they haven't already adapted. They need to become aware of this, just as they need to have a heightened awareness of the issues facing their employees based on race. And if they stick their head in the sand, they're asking for trouble, because they're going to have a workforce that doesn't operate as it should operate, and they're going to be talking to lawyers like me when they need to be running a business instead. And as for people who this law now protects, this is a wonderful day for you. And you know, particularly in Florida and Georgia and Alabama and across the United States. And so you should take advantage and be aware of what your rights are, and to, not be silent if you believe your rights have been violated.
I want to thank you both for joining us. Richard Margulies is principal at the Jackson Lewis firm in Jacksonville, educating us on the labor law here. And Jimmy Midyet with the Jacksonville Coalition for Equality. Guys, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thanks, Melissa.
And much more still ahead. Later, we're going to speak with Duval's own teen activist Taylor Richardson, plus her mom. But up next,
we have implemented a reimagined summer camp, which is virtual experiences.
How summer camps, including the Girl Scouts, are going virtual this season, thanks to COVID, of course. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is David McGowan, CEO here at WJCT, and I'd like to say thank you to all of you who helped us meet our goal during our fundraising drive last week. We are here for you, and you were there for us. Thank you.
The Voidcast from WJCT is a musical journey through Northeast Florida. I'm the host, Void Magazine editor Matt Shaw. Join me while I cut through the digital noise to share handpicked local music stories. WJCT.org/Voidcast.
Electro Lounge can now be heard Monday through Fridays at 10 p.m. till midnight and Saturdays from 9 to 11. Join us at the Electro Lounge only on 89.9 WJCT.
Introducing the Jacksonville Music Experience from WJCT, offering music lovers a variety of ways to enjoy favorite artists and discover new genres. Download the WJCT app or visit WJCT.org/JaxMusic to start listening today.
Welcome back. Well, summer break is upon us, but with the COVID pandemic, many camp experiences for kids are going virtual this season, and that includes the Girl Scouts. I spoke about it with Tricia Ray Stancato of Girl Scouts of Gateway Council. Take a listen. Tricia Ray, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
You know, a lot of parents are trying to figure out summer camp right now for their kids in this time of pandemic. The Girl Scouts of Gateway Council has launched a reimagined summer camp for girls. What's the setup for this?
Yes, in response to COVID and ensuring the safety of our girls and our members, we have implemented a reimagined summer camp, which is virtual experiences that will be held over 8 weeks this summer, where any girl can choose from 12 different sessions. And the greatest part of all is a girl that may not normally be interested in the outdoor experience or just interested in a subject can also attend these great virtual experiences.
Okay, and this is launching as a community service, right? You're opening this to all girls, whether or not they're in the Girl Scouts?
Correct. All girls are welcome to attend at the same cost as our typical members, and the fees for the program start at only $50 this year. so much less than a typical summer camp experience. And that also includes some wonderful home-delivered goods. That includes a summer t-shirt, a summer camp t-shirt, patches, all the equipment to complete your activities during your camp experience as well.
That's great. What would you say to girls and their parents out there who, you know, they're sad about missing the typical summer camp experience and all the fun stuff they get to do with other kids? Doing something virtually, no matter how hard we all try, you know, it's not going to be quite the same. What would you say to those that might be hesitating signing up for a virtual experience?
Yeah. So while we wish we could all be together in person, we are implementing some great activities to make girls feel like they're together. So not only are they going to connect virtually, which can be exhausting after a while, but what we're doing is having activities that get girls up and moving. They'll do activities outside in their house, so they won't just be sitting in front of the computer. So we're taking traditional camp experiences from making s'mores to singing songs to dancing to doing some great activities, depending on which week you choose, from STEM experiments to there's a theater program where girls will create their own play. So lots of different options to stay engaged and really have a true summer camp experience.
Excellent. So when does it kick off and how can people sign their kids up?
You can sign your kids up right now by visiting girlscouts-gateway.org. Camp actually starts next week, but it runs this whole summer. So you could still sign up and join one of the wonderful activities that we have offered.
All right. Thanks for the update. She's Tricia Ray Stancato with Girl Scouts of Gateway Council. Going to be fun camp experience. Thanks, Tricia Ray.
Northeast Florida has its fingerprints all over the history of popular music, and contemporary local artists are making music that's reverberating across the country. But I've found, even with apps putting millions of songs into our pockets, it's hard to discover local music.
Can I get y'all to just bob your heads?
I'm Void Magazine editor Matt Shaw, and that's why I'm hosting the Voidcast, produced by WJCT. You'll hear from local artists and the people who lived local music history. WJCT.org/Voidcast. Before you leave.
Introducing the Jacksonville Music Experience from WJCT, offering music lovers a variety of ways to enjoy favorite artists and discover new genres. Download the WJCT app or visit wjct.org/jacksmusic to start listening today.
Welcome back. Well, Jacksonville teen activist Taylor Richardson has appeared in many national magazines. She's been praised by celebrities like Oprah Winfrey and filmmaker Ava DuVernay. Now, Taylor, who is a student at the Bowles School, is using her platform and her growing national reputation to support Black Lives Matter and the thousands of local residents who've been out protesting and were arrested. Taylor is on the line along with her mom, Toni Richardson, and it's good to have you both on the show. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So good to have you. Taylor, let's start with you. You're building a national reputation for yourself, which is so exciting to watch. And you're using your platform on social media, which is impressive, I must say, to support Black Lives Matter. Tell us what you're doing.
Yes, ma'am. So I go out and protest myself, but I am a supporter of the Black Lives Matter movement. But I remember reading in the paper that on the last protest that I was at, there were 75 children that got arrested and also others who were peacefully protesting. So I decided to raise funds on GoFundMe to bail them out and hopefully get their records expunged.
How much have you raised so far?
$13,000.
Wow. that's going to bail out quite a few people. And can you explain why it's important to go about it in this this aspect of bail? Because some of the protesters can't afford bail. Is that right?
Yeah, some of them can't afford bail. And I guess the reason why I'm doing it is because I try to put myself in those shoes because I was out there too, and I know my mom probably couldn't afford bail if I had gotten arrested, and I know some of those kids are my age, so I decided to just empathize and put myself in their shoes, so I wanted to help out.
Now, Taylor, you have traveled the world advocating for STEM careers for particularly girls of color like yourself, and your mom has been by you every step of the way. Toni, you are such a great mom to Taylor. What are your thoughts as you see her growing in her activism and in her academic career and pursuing her goals?
I'm very proud of Taylor. She's turning 17 next month, and I just think she's a great kid. She's very humble. She's very passionate, just not about science, technology, engineering, and math, but she's very passionate about doing the right things the right way and standing up for causes that she believes in and helping others. So I'm very proud of the work that she has done thus far, and just can't wait to see what's next for her. But I do know that she's doing amazing work, not just nationally, but locally. And so that's kind of my big That's why I'm so proud of her, because she's not just, a lot of people think she's going, you know, leaving Jacksonville and doing all this national, these national things. But I love the fact that when Taylor's traveling, she always emphasizes that she's from Jacksonville or, you know, she's from Duval. And I love that when she does campaign, that she funnels that money right back into the community that means the most to her. So it makes me very proud to see the work that she's doing and that she hasn't forgotten where she's come from.
That's right. Now, Taylor, you won't forget where you come from, but you really do have big goals in terms of where you want to go. Specifically, you want to go into space. Your social media handle is Astronaut Starbright. You want to be an astronaut, yeah?
Yes, ma'am.
Why do you want to be an astronaut?
It's always been something that I had a passion for, but I guess what really sparked my interest is after reading Dr. Mae Jemison's autobiography, Find Where the Wind Goes. And after reading that, she was a Black woman and she went through some of the things that I went through, and she still, you know, made it to space and became an astronaut. I figured I could too. And also I could inspire other girls, especially girls of color, to go do the same thing.
What do you love about space? What attracts you to that?
The unknown, rare, how not many people get the chance to go, the process, meeting people, your fellow astronauts, and I guess it's something I've always been drawn to. Like, it's not something like a lot of people talk about unless we're in like elementary school, so I wanted to learn more about it. But yeah.
And it's your goal to go to Mars, isn't it?
Yes, ma'am.
Why do you want to go to Mars? And please stop calling me ma'am. Although I credit your mom for how polite you are, but oh my gosh, that, ma'am is my grandma. So why Mars?
Just because no one's been there. I like the color of the planet, and I heard there could be water in ice capsules, so I want to make sure it's true or if it's false. So I want to find out for myself.
Tony, what are your thoughts about Taylor's ambitions to go into space and be an astronaut, be the first African-American female astronaut to land on Mars?
Oh, wow. Well, I'm in the beginning, I was very nervous. I tried to get her to watch every type of space movie.
Yeah, you might want to watch The Martian before you go yeah. into Mars.
Yeah, she watched that, and she was like, oh, well, that can happen. No, that really doesn't happen, but that happens. But it kind of just fueled her passion to want to go more. I know when she was younger, because she also wants to be a physician. Her dad is a infectious disease physician, so he's on the front lines fighting COVID. And so when she was younger, she would always tell me that she wanted to be an astronaut and a physician so that she could see what's out there that could help people here on Earth. And so I'm just very proud of Taylor. I think she can do it. But most importantly, it's not about her being the first. It's about her inspiring others to join that table and inspire others and more to come to that table.
Now, Taylor, you have ADHD like so many kids do, including yes. one of my kids. Yes. You haven't let that slow you down. And in fact, you've even turned it into a branding opportunity. Can you tell me about that effort?
Yeah, I always thought having ADHD had such a negative connotation to it. And I noticed a lot of my other friends had it. They just were scared to, you know, let other people know. So I wanted to make sure they could embrace themselves and feel comfortable in their own skin without feeling, you know, weirded out or didn't want other people to know about it. So I also wanted to make people feel, you know, accepted. And I felt like it was a great part of me that I wanted to share with the world. So I made my own T-shirts, Abundantly Different, Happily Divine.
I love that. Abundantly Different, Happily Divine. That is excellent. We're speaking with Taylor and Tony Richardson right now about Taylor's activism and growing national profile from right here in Jacksonville. Now, going beyond the GoFundMe you've set up for the protesters in Jacksonville, let's talk a little bit more about the Black Lives Matter movement. And, you know, it's been around for some time. It was actually begun by three African-American women some years ago. How do you feel about the fact that in recent weeks, large majorities of Americans now support Black Lives Matter? There seems to have been a real critical mass in public opinion on this movement over the last several weeks.
I think it's a great movement. I say all the time, all lives can't matter until Black lives do. And I love all the support of different kinds of people from different backgrounds coming out. And I think the reason I support it so much is specifically because I understand as a Black girl what other Black women and Black men go through. Because every time I see, you know, police brutality, I feel a certain way in my heart. I feel like we're family, even though I've never met him or related to him. So I support the Black Lives Movement simply because I understand what some of the people are going through.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I love that everybody's coming out from different backgrounds and stuff supporting the movement. It really warms my heart.
And Tony, as Taylor's mom and as the parent of an African-American child, this is something that for parents of kids of color has been so deeply felt for so long. And so...
Yes, ma'am.
How are you sensing all of this in the country right now?
Echoing Taylor, I think it's awesome that people who do not look like us are advocating more. I think we need more people to donate to the cause, to not just protest. I feel that, you know, lots of people are getting arrested across the country, and I feel like... people should donate, people should give their time, support, and, you know, do anything that they can, because I do agree with Taylor. All lives can't matter until Black Lives Matter.
But as a black parent, I can tell you I went with Taylor that last weekend in May and protested with her. She wanted to stay, so I left. And I can't tell you the emotions that ran through my mind when I heard about, you know, things that happened later that evening and trying to make sure she had got home. And so that sense of fear, I'm not sure other people can relate to, you know, being a black person. Like when we see, just the other day, Taylor and I were driving and she saw a police car and she got very, very, very nervous. And I don't want her to feel that way. I mean, we do have some bad apples here and throughout the nation, but that type of fear no one should have to have as a child or as a parent of color, or specifically a black parent or a black child. And I just hope that the world in Jacksonville, I hope that we all wake up and try to do our due diligence to support black lives, because it's very exhausting and traumatic and very sad.
Here's a tweet from William. Taylor is a local, national, and international inspiration for all ages. She should be commended to continue to grow, and her mom, Toni, is a great representation of parental responsibility and accountability. Love from Uncle William and Auntie Ada. So they're listening in. They're listening in.
Hi. Hey, Uncle William.
And so
William's been a big supporter. He's been kind of mentoring Taylor. Since she was like 10 or 11, and Darnell Smith, he's been mentoring Taylor since she was 9. And I mean, she has a really good, strong support system here as a black single mom here in Jacksonville. I tell people all the time, when Taylor graduates in 2 years from Bowles, there's going to be a lot of people at that graduation that's going to say they contribute to this kid walking across that stage.
Well, so, that is excellent. And we moms need all the help they can get. So I'm glad to hear it. And check out Taylor's GoFundMe. She's Taylor Richardson, Astronaut Starbright on social media. Thank you so much, Taylor. I've been following your amazing evolution for some years now, so it's great to finally have you and your mom, Toni, on the show, and I'll be watching you, as will all of us here in Duval, to see what great things you do. So Taylor and Toni Richardson, thanks so much, and see you soon.
Thanks for having me and my mommy.
Thank you.
A quick break, and when we come back, some ideas for summer reading. We'll be right back.
One Florida Clinical Research Consortium is looking for essential workers in healthcare to join the HERO Registry and help researchers at the University of Florida and nationwide understand what their experience is like on the front lines of COVID-19. Nurses, food service workers, respiratory therapists, environmental service workers, long-term care facility workers, emergency responders, and other clinical and non-clinical personnel can join online at heroesresearch.org.
Meatpacking plants, Smithfield is the most famous one, have become notorious coronavirus hotspots. And for businesses nearby, that has been a challenge.
We asked any employee who was associated with, lived with, close family member, whatever, of an employee at Smithfield to stay home.
I'm Kai Rosdahl, a small business navigating this pandemic in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Next time on Marketplace.
This evening at 6 here on 89.9 WJCT. On the next Fresh Air, what happens to women who get an abortion just under a clinic's deadline? And what happens to women who just miss the deadline and are denied an abortion? We'll talk with Diana Green Foster, the principal investigator of a 10-year study comparing those two sets of women. Her new book is about the results of the study. Join us today at noon on 89.9 WJCT.
He's likely the hardest working man in America.
I'm living a very simple life like most people are. It's the life I've chosen and I have no regrets about it, but it is exhausting.
Dr. Anthony Fauci is the nation's top infectious disease expert and for millions, a voice of calm amid the chaos. He joins us next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Hi, I'm Melissa Ross.
And I'm Tom Hudson.
Together, we host the Florida Roundup, a weekly live statewide call-in show looking at the biggest issues impacting the Sunshine State. If it's making news in Florida, you'll hear it on the Florida Roundup. So join us each Friday at noon, right here on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Renewed calls are ringing out for state leadership to remove the Confederate monument from the lawn of Florida's historic capital in Tallahassee. Ryan Daly has more.
It's part of a revisionist history used against minorities in our state as a symbol of hatred and false supremacy.
Prominent political consultant Kevin Cate, who lives in Tallahassee, wrote a new op-ed that's run in newspapers across Florida. But Cate has been calling for the monument to come down for years. He says it isn't just hurtful to many in the state. He calls what's written on the monument fake history.
That memorial was not put up for history because the history is inaccurate. Among other things, it puts Gettysburg in Virginia and makes up three Florida battles that didn't really happen the way that should be glorified by anyone. It was put up as a sort of symbol, a sort of weapon against a minority in our state. And I think that the time is long past due for us to bring it down.
Cate notes others, including state legislators like Representative Geraldine Thompson, have joined in asking for its removal. He adds the monument was moved to its current spot in 1923 at the direction of Florida's then governor. He says current governor Ron DeSantis has the power to have it removed.
One of the most frustrating parts about this is the previous administration Rick Scott kind of feigned interest in taking it down. The lawmakers feigned interest in taking it down, and they kind of got caught into a limbo of whose job is it to take it down, and ultimately, it's the Florida governor's job.
Kate says if the governor won't remove the monument, it would become a job for the Florida cabinet. Former state legislator Dwight Bullard, who now heads progressive advocacy group New Florida Majority, addressed the monument during a recent conference call hosted by Florida Democrats. He says it's a symbol of larger racial disparities in Florida, like those in healthcare, nutrition, and banking.
All those things are intertwined with, you know, an institutional and systemic racism that cannot just be fixed by policy alone. It does take a willingness to change hearts and minds. And more importantly, an acknowledgement by people in positions of power around the state that we've done wrong. You know, right there on the Capitol grounds is still a Confederate monument.
Calls for the Capitol's Confederate monument to topple come after Gadsden County removed a Confederate monument outside of its courthouse last week, and others have been dismantled around the U.S. I'm Ryan Daly.
Of course, the Confederate statue in downtown Heming Park came down last week. That was a huge development here in Jacksonville. And Mayor Lenny Curry has announced that the city's other Confederate monuments and markers will also be removed. What's yet to be decided is whether other local public places and schools that were named after figures from the Confederacy, will those names be changed? And of course, the military has said they're going to rename bases around the country that were named after former Confederate figures, including Fort Benning up in Georgia. So we'll be following that here on this program and on our newscasts and online at WJCT.org. Well, that's our show. Thanks so much to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Josh Torres is show director. WJCT's news director is Jessica Palumbo. Bill Bortsfield runs our digital operations here in our newsroom. And keep those emails coming. We really appreciate all your feedback. First Coast Connect at WJCT.org. If you missed anything from today's show, you can catch the rebroadcast tonight at 8 o'clock or get our podcast on our website, our app, or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect. Have a great day. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow and connect with you then.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.